Street View Podcast is part of the Dallas Public Library's Homeless Engagement Initiative, dedicated to increasing community awareness of issues related to homelessness. The opinions expressed are solely those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Dallas Public Library or the City of Dallas.
How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? You got it all figured out, straight from your cube. Life's a musical, maybe a carousel. How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? Perception starts with selection. The same streets you walk on, they carry their own view. This is Street View.
Most humble and gracious God, we come right now thanking you. Most powerful and mighty God, we are so grateful for your love. Thank you for all the love that you have given us, God, and you show to us on a daily basis. We ask that we dig down within ourselves, God, and see you. We see you within us, God, and we enact and react to that by showing the love that you show to us, to everyone that we come into contact with. We pray for this because we are all humans, made to communicate, made to be intrinsic, made to be like intrinsically knitted with consideration and concern and different attributes of who you are. And the things that you show us, God, we pray to show others, God. And right now, God, we're going to do what you have always done, God. We're going to take time to be considerate of others and ourselves by loving. We thank you for this time and this opportunity, for you donating your time to us. We pray it in Jesus Christ's name. Amen. Here it is, y'all. What's happening? Rashad Anthony Dickerson on the first, or should I say on the podcast. Rashad Anthony Dickerson here on the podcast. Thank you guys for coming out and tuning in. Thank you guys for donating time. I want to especially give that sentiment to my guest. My guest is a Mr. Bill Thompson of the United, or should I say of the Union Gospel Mission. Of the Union Gospel Mission. Also in the studio today, we have our AmeriCorps help desk individual, our liaison for the homeless as well as the housed, the help desk constituent we look to for help, all in the homeless community as well as just being here at the library. Miss Amabel, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you, Brother Bill. We also have Mr. Malcolm, and of course we could not do this without having an engineer, someone who could key this together. When we make blurs and blunders, this individual works to make sure the uhs and the ums are in place, in proper positioning. So thank you guys all for tuning in. Today, we're going to talk about the Union Gospel Mission, and we're also going to have some chiming in from Amabel, who deals with individuals who exclusively go to the Union Gospel Mission, as well as Malcolm, who's a great facilitator here at the library. First off, let's jump into Brother Bill. You mind if I call you Brother Bill?
Not at all.
Thanks for coming
Everybody
on the show.
Everybody does.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
So if you don't mind, just giving us a few minutes of UGM, its history, its mission, some things about UGM that you think ordinary individuals who aren't homeless don't know.
Well, Union Gospel Mission is actually Dallas's oldest provider of services to the homeless. We've been in Dallas since 1949, and we were actually started by Christian businessmen who were the merchants in the downtown Dallas area. They actually ran the stores and the shops and all of that, and it was their view of what was going on in the streets in terms of people coming and getting off the trains, and basically the hobo types that people talk about from the past. Don't call them that anymore. Anyway, they saw these people coming and not having any provisions, and so they decided that as Christians, they needed to do something about it. And so it was that effort to do something about what they saw developing that really resulted in the formation of the mission, first by that group and their activity here locally, and then their desire to see what other places were doing to meet the issue. And so they sent a delegation to the Macaulay Water Street Mission in New York City to find out how they were dealing with homelessness in the city. And so they came back with a pretty clear vision that these were not occasional needs that need to be met every day. They need to be met in facilities that were equipped to deal with the numbers that were there. They needed all of the staples, food, clothing, shelter. They needed opportunity for a changed life. And so they came back here with the intent to do the same thing here and incorporated in 1951 and as the Union Gospel Mission. And then it was on from there, you know. So it became a daily activity in rented facilities in the downtown area on Irving Street. And there were two of those, and finally decided that they would build a facility of their own in 1963. That facility still stands today, actually right across from the bridge downtown. It's a red brick building. And so we were there in that facility for until 1994, in which time I think the greater expansion of the mission started, and we moved out of the downtown area, but into a lot more spacious facilities, and have continued to evolve the way that we meet homeless needs.
I want to talk about that expansion later, but at the moment, I just kind of want to ask you, well, what's your role in it? When did you actually become involved in it? And what is your official role with Union Gospel Mission?
Well, let me ask the second question first. I am the executive director of the Union Gospel Mission. That I assumed that role in 1988. I got involved with the mission as a volunteer here, but actually had some experience with homelessness in upstate New York, where I came here from. And I served at a soup kitchen there as a volunteer, and got to know the men that were coming into that facility, and eventually started to give them my phone number and things like that that would help them to get in contact with me on my job. I was a chemist with Bristol-Myers. And so they contacted me, and a lot of them would actually end up either going to jail or in the hospital, and they would call my number for a visit or to make sure that I made contact with their families. And so it became just something that I truly enjoyed, and something I eventually decided to leave my employment and to do full time as a volunteer. And later decided that I needed to broaden my educational base, and that's what brought me to Dallas. But I started at the mission as a volunteer in 1983. Then quickly that volunteer relationship turned into basically a love affair between me and the homeless folks that were on the street. Yeah. And that love affair has continued to grow over these years because I see myself as no different than the guy that comes in the door. It may be that I may be wearing some shoes that don't have holes in the bottom, but I still have needs like everybody else has. And I want to make sure that I am reaching out and doing for them the same thing that I would do for myself or for my brother or for my uncle or a friend. And I have had occasions where that was the case, that I've had relatives that actually were homeless at the shelters and lived there and basically got their lives back on track and move on. So I want to do that for everybody.
That's excellent. That's an excellent thought. I deal with a lot of individuals who've been in the Union Gospel Mission. Myself, I stayed there for a very long time. Is it hard for you to reach out to all of the individuals, the homeless individuals that are coming through the doors of UGM?
People are all different, as it turns out. I'm sure we all know that. And so there is no cookie cutter answer for each person that comes into the door. Some people have been hurt, and some have been discouraged. Some have been misused, some abused. And so it's not until the issue that brought that person to homelessness presents itself that there's any kind of a resolution that can actually take place. And some folks are want to conceal what that is, either because they're ashamed of it or because they're not ready to deal with it yet, or either that they don't trust you to deal with it. And so whatever the case is, they will eventually allow you in or not. And to the extent that they are willing to allow you to come in and your intent is truly to help them, it's not like you point fingers or that you are looking to lay blame anywhere. You're simply looking to link arms and link hands and hearts with that individual and help them to move forward, to walk along with them as they go forward. So the variety of people that come in and the number of issues that are that they're dealing with makes it a difficult situation to forward at times, because people are just not willing to open up and allow you to help if, to the extent that you can.
Ms. Amabel, you deal with a number of individuals on a daily basis. About how many of those would you say have lived or are staying at the Union Gospel Mission?
A lot of them don't disclose where they stay. They just share that they're in the community. And when I do present, where are you staying? They don't like to share that a lot of times.
How many have you referred to Union Gospel Mission?
Very few. I haven't. This is actually my first time hearing about it. I've mainly tried to help them with the resources that they need as far as getting into shelters, like to the Stew Pot, where they're getting their IDs and their birth certificates and stuff like that, because they can't reside at a certain location because of some mandates that are in place.
Some of the things Brother Bill was just talking about as far as individuals sometimes not exposing situations that make it difficult for them to find housing or something of that nature. So my question is this, who do you serve, Brother Bill?
Well, we try and serve any homeless person that is willing to come in and to abide by the rules in the shelter.
From my standpoint, I recognize that you guys have a all-male shelter as well as an all-female shelter as well as
a
family, right?
Women and children's shelter. Right. And then, we have a single women's facility.
Okay, so...
And you, transitional housing.
When you say anyone, anyone.
Yes, if they're homeless. At the men's shelter, we're warning people because of the times in which we live. You never know who's who, so you want to make sure that they have a valid ID. So you know who's in your shelter and what their capability is because, you know, you're liable if something happens in your facility and you allow that person to come in that's the perpetrator. At the women's facility, the women's children's facility, which is called the Center of Hope, we take women with children and we require that that woman has birth certificates for the children that are with her. We want everyone to have a birth certificate or some form of identification that's state approved. At the single women's facility, all the intake for the females are actually done at the Center of Hope. And then we transport the women to the single women's facility, which is north of 635. This is really not downtown at all. And those are basically the requirements. Obviously, we don't make any distinctions in terms of whether the person's a sex offender or anything like that. We figure everybody needs help. And we prefer to be the place where that help starts in a way that the life is changed so that they don't become a menace to themselves or to someone else. We are funded about 90% from private donors. We get about 5% of our support from churches and the remainder from corporations and foundations and corporations.
Malcolm, are you familiar with that, the funding aspect of an organization or a shelter? If they're not like of a state, if they're not being funded through the state, are you familiar with that in any aspect?
I guess a little bit more clarification is needed in terms of what distinction it is being made versus someone who's state funded versus someone who isn't.
So I guess that's my question as well. I mean, what's the absolute difference?
Well, the only difference is really who steps up to support your cause. There are some organizations that receive federal funds and state funds. I guess as the closest that we come to that is we do have two veteran programs that operate in the mission. One of them is a program that we call the VA per diem program. And these people are actually sent to us by the Veterans Administration. The other program is a shorter term program, which is about a 90-day program with options to move into a longer term program. And these are basically individuals that are veterans, that are homeless, that are hard to serve, that perhaps have some health care issues. And so it's called Health Care for Homeless Veterans. The VA actually sends them to us, and then they support their stay while they're on a daily basis while they're there at the shelter. The primary difference is either you are an organization that contracts with the government or through some government or HUD funding, or you're an organization that's primarily funded by individuals that have no ties to government.
I guess one sort of tie-in to that would be, you know, the extent to which an organization that's faith-based would be able to sort of convey their message to their clients. If they're government funding, then you wouldn't be able to have that sort of option. But if you're privately funded, then you could do that as much as you please.
As a homeless individual, I find it very, very important to build upon resources. So what resources do you guys have available, not only in UGM, but also as well as Center of Hope?
Okay, now, so there's one organization. Okay, it's all UGM. It's all UGM. So there's a Union Gospel Mission Center of Hope, and there's a Union Gospel Mission Calvert Place, and the Union Gospel Mission River Point, but they're all the same organization. We have for the longest, since we moved out of downtown, and actually before we moved out of downtown, started to develop some outlets where people could actually go to work. We have a program that is called General Services, and General Services has been around for 20 years. And we would provide services to do lawn care and maintenance, moving jobs, small painting jobs, tree trimming, painting. And so people that have those kinds of skills could actually sign on to work with the General Services program. We felt it was not adequate to ground a man in the scriptures and not provide them with some means to support themselves. First and foremost, because I think it's a violation of the principles of just human dignity for a person to be able to work and not work and not support himself. I think there's something that is intrinsically built into the psyche of that person that wants to contribute to his own welfare and to his own upkeep. And so we want to provide that. At the same time, we recognize that there are abilities that a person may have that are not so clear to that individual that will only become clear as he puts to work the things that he is aware of. So there may be some people that have strong leadership skills that have never been in a leadership role, or some people that are highly organized and could provide a function that is needed by a company. But if those talents are not developed, then they'll just simply lie dormant. And that person will be unfulfilled to the extent that they have these abilities, but they're not put to use. And so a part of these trainings that we've come up with, and that was the first one, I mentioned it because it's the oldest, but following the general services, we then opened an automobile program where we took donated cars. And the distinction was, whereas there are a lot of people that take donated cars and they sell the donated cars. Well, we actually work on cars. We'll take a car and we don't care whether the car is running or not that a person donates. We will put an engine in the car. We'll put another transmission into it. We'll torch off the back end of it that was actually torn up in an accident and in case of a truck, and attach another back end to it and make it an operating vehicle. A lot of those vehicles we find are needed by single parent families that are in the community. And so what we do with those single parent families is we'll allow them to come in. In a lot of cases, the central problem is they have an income, but the credit is terrible. And so they can't go to a marketplace and just say, I want that car over there, and I'm able to pay $150 a month payment. Well, that may be true, but all of the debt that they have amassed won't allow them to do that. And so we don't necessarily look into what are the other encumbrances that are there. We want to help you right where you are, and we'll write a contract with that person. And sometimes that contract requires that they pay $100 a month as they buy the car. Yeah. So $25 a week. Okay. Yeah. You can afford that $25 a week and your insurance and gas. Then, you know, here's a car, and you know, we'll just work with you to so that you own your own transportation.
Well, I'll say this, based on what I've heard, you guys are actually in the business of walking alongside an individual, working with them. It ought to be in you guys' mission statement.
Yeah, I guess it should. It would be a pretty long mission statement, but it should be there somehow.
I mean, do you guys have one? A mission statement?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, we exist to operate a homeless shelter in Dallas, Texas, addressing the spiritual and physical needs of homeless people, leading them to a saving knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ, and helping to become stable in the community.
Helping to become stable. I think it is in there.
Yeah.
So basically here at the library, what we do is we've been helping a lot of different individuals. Mm-hmm. People from either encampments or shelters, or just even normal everyday individuals, out of towners. We deal with a variety of people. While I was at UGM, I met a variety of people. And some of the people I met at UGM have been helped here at the library. A good friend of mine, Charlie Piano, was with you guys for a while. And he's when I got there, he was there. He's really, really progressed. So I'd like to give like a brief synopsis of what a night at UGM is like, if you don't mind.
Oh, for me? You like me?
No, I'll do it. Okay, I'll do it. Okay. I just want to, you know, yeah, just correct me if I'm wrong.
All right. Okay.
All right. So usually for the men, for my aspect, you have to be homeless, and you have to also be utilizing the bridges services.
We do our intake at the bridge. Yeah.
Okay. So there's an intake at the bridge wherein you go into a pavilion. And it used to be 5 o'clock. You needed to be in. And if you already have been a recurring member or a recurring attendee at UGM, it needed to be at 6. So you get in about 5. They go over a list of individuals who've already been at the shelter. They give them what you call a bed ticket. And this bed ticket on the bed ticket has a number of which bus you'll be riding. You guys then transport them from the bridge to the Union Gospel Mission. While at the mission, they're given a time frame and in this time frame, you get to choose whether you want to attend Bible study or whether you want to just, you know, chill, enjoy the rest of your day. Your day's been long or whatever. So you have different places where you can sit. There are vending machines. You guys also operate a clothes closet, mm-hmm. wherein an individual on a specific day of the week would be able to acquire certain articles of clothes. It's getting cold. One of my favorite leather jackets came from you guys. Yeah, from a clothes closet. And so then you have that time, and that's till 7:30?
6:30.
Okay. 6:30 after, what did you guys start at? 8?
The Bible study starts at 6:30.
6:30 is when the Bible study starts. After it's over, what, an hour?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Then depends on who's speaking.
Yeah, depends. I've heard you speak. I've heard you speak, and I was grateful because the Bible study is really, really informative. If somebody's in tune with the Bible, or if you have a lot of questions and things of that nature, they walk you through certain processes, certain concepts that you might be able to utilize in society. 7:30, everybody's guided to where the Bible study's held, and then a sermon or a lecture, or sometimes you guys even just have Christian music play. I still have the one song, the one group, they come and they turn the song Welcome to Hotel California into Welcome to You to the Mission Union. No, Mission Union Gospel. Yeah. So you have that time frame, and in that time frame, nobody's allowed to leave. You need to be in that area unless you need to utilize the bathroom or receive water. After that, everybody's ushered into the kitchen where you guys feed. They dine. Yeah. And after that, they're ushered to the bathroom and the shower, and they have to all take a shower. This is one of the mandatory protocols so that we can keep the facilities clean, that you guys can do that. And then they're ushered to the bed. And did I get it right?
Yes, that's one side of the picture.
Okay.
Because of our capacity, mm-hmm. we've had to divide up the meal times. And so there is a meal time that actually occurs before Bible study. Mm-hmm. And then there's another meal time that occurs after the evening chapel service.
Right.
And that is, there are actually 5 meals a day served at the mission. We have divided into the seniors, really? Men that are 55 years old and older, and we allow them to come and have their meal before, because we realize it's going to take a much longer time after service to get people fed and upstairs and in showers and into the bedwear and into bed. And so we divide those times up. So the veterans and the men in the discipleship program, mm-hmm. will have a meal after the seniors.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yes, after the seniors. And then the third meal for the evening will be served at the chapel service to the folk that didn't eat beforehand.
Do me a favor. Talk a little bit about the discipleship program, because I've heard about it. Mm-hmm. And I've had to interact with individuals who are in the discipleship program. At one point in time, I actually thought that it might be a great fit for me, but I didn't have enough information about it. Could you tell?
Sure can. Uh-huh. The discipleship program is something that developed at the UGM about 33 years ago. It is a program designed to ground an individual who has trusted the Lord in the truths and the concepts of the scriptures, and to have that as the basis or the foundation on which he will build the remainder of his life. And so there are 4 phases to the discipleship program at the men's facility. There are 5 phases to the program at the women's facility, at both women's locations. These are designed first to acquaint a person with a basic understanding of the scriptures. Then for that person to all the way along to identify with places or issues in their lives that might be contradictory to the scriptures, so that they can embrace what it's like to change in those areas. And we come in with a load of things that we need to unload. And so it's designed to walk a person through all of those steps. First, we want them to have a vital relationship with Jesus Christ. Then we want them to understand what that vital relationship is all about. Now that you've mended the most important relationship that was broken, how now can we learn to translate that into how other relationships are to work as a result of it? So you begin to gain a healthy self-respect, begin to gain a respect for others, and then to gain a respect for the need to share what you've learned with other people, that so that they can come to grips with issues that they may have and identify with the process of becoming a disciple themselves. It has four phases. The first phase of the program is just to build the basic of the Christian life. The second is designed to help that person to look at his old life in the light of what he has now come to learn and know in his relationship with Jesus, and to continually address what change needs to be made. Then after we are going down that path, then the third thing we want to do is we want to take what he's learned on those two phases and put it into a simulated work relationship where he takes it to the workplace and see how that works now with others that he's actually being accountable to, that he has, that he's either under the authority of or called to exercise some authority over it eventually. And then the final phase of the program is called Pathways. And we don't talk a lot about Pathways, but Pathways is the aspect of the program where a person actually leaves the mission and goes out into mission-owned apartments. We have two of them. And those apartments on the east side and north side of town. And then there's another location that's in Carrollton that's a single family for folk that find jobs. See, in order to get into the Pathways program, you have to have completed three phases of the program. You have to have at least $800 in savings. You have to have your own transportation if you're a driver. You have to have all of your responsibilities paid current if you have child support. And we'll help you to arrange those, okay? Child support or obligations to the state like parole fees or probation fees. Yeah, obviously you have to have a full-time job. Okay, and then you have to be a member of a local church. In other words, an accountability group that's going to help you to move on past the mission.
I'm curious, Mr. Thompson, about you actually and your position of leadership. I thank you for giving us the history of the organization. I know when you and I first met, you gave me the rundown and everything. I wasn't aware that it was actually you all were started by Christian businessmen. But one of the most striking things that I saw and that's coming out in this conversation is the business behind sort of everything in terms of all the different programs that you're offering and training, you know, people on different job areas and things like that. And so that's a lot. And transitional housing, your emergency shelters, your transitional housing, your employment programs and the various aspects of each of the programs, you know, they're in. How do you keep it all together?
Well,
what techniques do you use to
learned a long time ago that I'm not in control of anything. So I learned to turn it over to the people that are in control, okay, and trust that they are trusting the same person that I'm trusting to lead and to guide. But we've tried to perceive need and to be needs driven and to understand that there's probably a larger community than we can imagine of people out there that are wanting to help to meet needs. And so when you make the opportunity available, then you find people stepping up to really want to get involved. And they want to get involved in ways that not just sort of piecemeal or just get you from step one to step two. They want to get involved in actually providing some solutions. And so since we are needs driven, we want to make sure that the way that we address those needs really address the whole as opposed to just a partial.
And one other question. Do you have a large volunteer base at all?
We have about 500 volunteers that are between the three facilities. We have a volunteer coordinator who coordinates those volunteers. And that's going to be growing because of the addition. You mentioned the vocational training center that we just dedicated on the 20th of February, and it's going to teach trades, and there will be a lot of volunteer opportunity in there to teach homeless people trades. So there are about 500 of them currently that we know that we can depend on, and there are a lot of things that we ask volunteers to do. Sometimes they're seasonal things like Thanksgiving time. We do a Meals on Wheels. We want people to let us know that they are not able to put a Thanksgiving meal on the table, and then we're going to cook the meal and we're going to transport the meal to them using volunteers to take those meals. We have events, and sometimes those events are like we have a homeless game day each year. That's 24 years since we've started doing that, and it's like it's a day in the park. It has competitions like 4-on-4 basketball and 100-yard dash and 50-yard dash, and have games for kids and different kinds of competition. And so we ask area churches and people that want to get involved to come out and help us to have a fun day for folks that are homeless. It's always the last Saturday in June, because we realize that, the 4th of July is coming up, and as special as that is for a lot of people, not everybody's able to have a fun time on the 4th of July. So we want to assure that there's some fun that's really had.
Brother Bill, you talked about the discipleship program and some other various programs. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if there was an average time that it took in order to get through the various discipleship program, those four phases.
The four phases take the average guy about 13 months.
I come across a lot of individuals that are seeking out residential areas that are faith-based. And talking about that program, the discipleship program, seems, I know like one person right offhand that could fit well into that program. Just listening to all the, you know, the outlets that y'all have, I just had a question about communication. How do you guys have that open line of communication between all of these programs? Because, I mean, it's obviously functioning well, and you have a lot of persons volunteering and organizing and all this. How do you guys manage all of that together as one interdependent facility?
In the case of volunteers, it's pretty much volunteer driven, but there's kind of a mirror staff for the men's program to the women's program. So there's a women's program director, there's a men's program director, and then there are chaplains that actually work under those, and there are counselors that in any other environment, there would be your counselors. But we are on Facebook, and there's literature that we send out to folk that are on a mailing list, and we talk about the programs that are there. The guys that are on the programs internally are called the blue shirts. In other words, they wear these blue shirts that have a Union Gospel Mission logo on them. And so down at the bridge, it is some of those guys that are actually helping with the intake. A lot of folks have come on to the program because somebody approached them at the bridge when they were checking in and say, and they got to share a little bit about what was going on with them. And they said, well, you need to go to the Union Gospel Mission. They have a program that sounds exactly like what you're looking for. And so some of it's word of mouth, but, everybody's on Facebook and, doing email these days. And so, yeah, we have a website, and people can find our website. If you just Google homelessness, we're going to pop up, and it'll tell you. Probably we'll have some testimonies about what some guys have done as they came to the mission. But I think the best way that we get the word out is people that have come through the program, that have succeeded in the program, that are actually back out in the community. There are a little over 30 guys that actually came to the mission and now work for the mission. I mean, so opportunity is actually being created inside. And lately, there have been companies that have come to us and want to partner with us in terms of training so that they can, and sometimes it's longer term. And other times, you'll have, that happened this week, have a guy that has a street cleaning business, and he is looking for 5 people to hire. And so we developed a work program. So if that man hires those 5 people, there's an area of the building where these guys can actually sleep. We help ask them to develop a budget. We ask them to develop a plan as to how long they're going to need to work on that job before they can actually move into their own apartment. Now, it doesn't have to be our apartment. It could be any apartment that they choose to live in. But we're going to supply the place to live. We're going to supply the lunch. We're going to supply the meals when they're in the building. We're going to supply the clothing. We're going to supply, we'll help with transportation if that's needed, so that that guy is then this plug right directly into an outlet that's going to help him to get off the street. Now, obviously it could be that somebody would say, well, I want my own place, but I'm going to have to use the money that I make to pay the rent. Well, how long is that going to take? And is that really feasible at today's rents to have a $9 an hour job and, pay $550 a month in rent? And so what we're trying to do is to plug people in to the most efficient way for them to move on. Now, sometimes there are other issues, though. And I have to say this, that not everyone that comes in to the mission looking for a job is ready for a job. And sometimes it's hard to convince a person who is looking for a job that they're not ready for a job, because either some issues with their personality or some issues with some kind of abuse that they may be dealing with that they don't want you to share with you. They lost 3 jobs already, and now they're just looking for the 4th job, which is actually going to be lost just like the other 3, unless there's some addressing of the issues that caused them to lose the other jobs. and some grounding in life that's going to help them not to use their money for stuff that's frivolous, but to actually build on a foundation that's solid. It's hard kind of to talk a person down to that level where they really need to engage to assure that they're going to have success later on when they got all of these other pieces that they need in place.
Hey, you guys stay tuned. We'll be right back. I heard you guys talk about the 20th, February 20th, you guys opened a vocational center. Now, that's something new for me. I haven't been up at the mission for a very long time, probably about 8, maybe 9 months. Mm-hmm. But I heard you guys were having some new developments going on. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the vocational training over?
Yeah, the vocational training center is something that we've had in mind for quite a while. You know, there. I think the idea got started when we needed to do some renovations in our building. Incidentally, we have 431 beds in the men's facility. Well, at the point that we had 350 of those beds, we needed to add some additional beds. And so we went to the people that would normally do our construction and presented the project to them and said, well, yeah, we certainly like to do the project, but we're tied up and we don't have enough manpower to actually do the job. So you'll have to look to find somebody else. And I was thinking, oh, you need manpower. We've got manpower. You know, I just need to get the manpower trained to be able to step into these jobs that you would have.
Available.
So, yeah, available. And so and we continued to find the same thing. We left that person, went to the next person. They said, it's going to be 3 months before we can get to you guys. We're doing a job down in West Texas, and we're short of manpower. And it's like, okay, manpower. I keep hearing that word. And so we decided, let's find out what the needs are, what kind of manpower needs that there are, and let's see if we can qualify some people to step in and meet those needs. So we found that the needs were carpentry, masonry, floor and wall covering, sheetrock, painting, and hospitality. Hospitality. There are a lot of the people that are in the hotel industry that have lots and lots and lots of turnover. As a matter of fact, I heard that the turnover rate is about 72%
really?
In the hotel industry. And so they're out there crying for people. And we have people there that are crying for work.
Right.
So I thought, well, why not build into the vocational training center a mock hotel suite where you can come to that place and you can learn how the W makes up their beds, or how the Radisson Hotel or the Renaissance makes up their beds, or the Sheraton. And each of them have different styles. And so we're inviting those people to come in and train people how to do work there in the hotel, and when you have an opening, simply plug the person in that you've trained, so you don't have to go outside. Saves you cost on funds in terms of trying to find people, and then the cost of training them. We want you to train them here, and so we're asking people that are in these disciplines to simply supply us the training person who will train these people. Then we can apprentice people to work in those trades, and then you can hire the people that you want to hire because you already have a relationship with them and you've already trained them.
So you guys are up and running, you're functional.
We are actually putting in the equipment now for the trainings.
Okay.
We're putting three automobile bays in it, and then the carpentry section is about set up.
So what will be the eligibility requirements for people to sort of become involved in the program? Must they be your clients, or will people be able to get through you all without being clients of yours?
We'll start with our clients, but ultimately we want this to be open to all homeless people in Dallas. That's the goal, for us to be able to meet any person's need that really is serious about training and really about learning a skill that he can utilize to get himself out of homelessness.
So basically what I heard is there is no set intake process at the moment.
Oh, yeah. You'll apply for the program, and we'll take as many people as we can handle at a time.
Okay.
But we'll continue to work through and all that. I mean, I forgot to add, one of those trainings is in the environmental field, and that's asbestos abatement, groundwater, and all of that. And those are good-paying jobs. They start at $14 an hour, and the average person that works full-time in one of those jobs makes about $54,000 a year. We will actually provide that training on-site, and we'll have grant funding to actually underwrite the specific kinds of training that need to happen there that won't happen on our site. We'll actually take them to the place in Irving that's set up to do that kind of training. And that cost of that training will be underwritten by grant funding for the person to learn that. And sometimes it's a 4 week for some disciplines. It's 8 weeks for others. It's 3 months for others.
depending upon the quality of that training. Yeah, we're looking to turn 100 people the first year.
Basically, after hearing you guys' history and where you guys are now, my question is, are you proud of you guys? Are you proud of Union Gospel Mission?
Well, I am delighted about what the Lord is doing at the Union Gospel Mission. And when you're on board with what the Lord is doing, you can't help but be stand in awe daily.
Yeah.
And I get the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I see lives change. And yeah, I'm proud of what that it means to the life of that person now and for what it means for eternity.
Brother Bill, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it, all of the insight. And as an individual who was homeless and sees the resources you guys are providing, I actually went through you guys' program and I didn't really know much about you guys outside of that you provided a warm bed and a hot meal.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to encourage, in a sense, more involvement as far as the shelter portion and letting the guys know what you guys have available. Because for me, I knew you guys had a VA program.
Mm-hmm.
I knew you guys had a basketball and a goal out there. But I didn't know about all of the other stuff that was going on within the organization.
Yeah.
I was curious about the discipleship program, but I never had the right. I don't think that I had an outlet that I could reach out to from you guys' standpoint mm-hmm. that could actually give me a proper understanding of what you guys were into. I've heard about four phases, and I'm really, 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 really proud of you guys. I mean, because obviously me being from on the opposite side of from the homeless side, the standpoint where there are rules and regulations that I need to follow, I've noticed individuals have a lot of things to say about UGM, but there's hearsay, but then there's actually a thought in the process of doing things. And I'd like to encourage and engage and help you guys to project what you guys are doing over there towards other individuals. Thanks again for coming on the show.
I thank you. I appreciate you having me here.
Yes, sir.
We want to see how far we can go in making a difference here in this town.
That's it. Man, you know what? I've been trying to cultivate a culture here outside of, you know, how about them Cowboys? Or it's so diverse in Dallas that it's very hard to find individuals who are like-minded, in a sense. For me, specifically because I'm from New Orleans and I don't really, you know, I didn't grow up here. So a lot of the things I'm learning about, I think that's been the greatest tragedy as well as benefit for me is that I've had to look for resources. And so I really want to thank you guys for providing a bunch of resources that I could tell some of my friends about here at AmeriCorps at the help desk, which is why I want to go ahead and thank Ms. Amabel for working diligently with the homeless as they come in, as well as with the housed. And now I hope that you guys have I don't know what kind of resources you guys have, but I know you guys have been added to by Brother Bill here. So thank you for coming on the show, Ms. Amabel. Malcolm, thanks. I couldn't do this without you. You know that as well as Ryan. Does anybody else? All minds are clear.
I just want to say that I'm thankful to meet you, and I see that you're doing a lot of community development, and I can understand why people want to contribute to what you're doing. And like you said, it's you're doing your servant duty, and I can't say thank you enough, but I believe your reward is, like you said, in time, and then with being able to see that visibly produce results. So, yeah, thank you.
I want to thank everybody for listening and tuning in, and I want to encourage everyone to go out and provide the resources that an individual needs, because Lord knows resources have been provided for everybody here. Captain, thanks. Thanks for taking care of the sound, man. I want to give major kudos to Mr. Ryan, and I ask that you would pray for everybody here, that we will continue to be caring and loving and considerate of one another. If y'all don't mind, I'll pray us out and we can go about our business. Love. Father God, as not to be hasty, to be patient and loving and kind and humble, we come and we thank you for today and the events of today. We thank you for the weather. We thank you for alternate perspectives outside of our own. We ask that you, who sees all and knows all, would convey knowledge and wisdom and understanding to us all. Not only the people here in this room, but the people who are willing to be a contributing factor to another. So we love you and we thank you and we praise you, in a sense, because your love and your goodness and your kindness and your mercy has been our benefit. And we thank you for that. And we pray this in the name of him who is matchless, one who gave And he didn't just give, he lived for us. We thank you for all. In Jesus Christ's name, amen.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Street View. You can visit us online at streetviewpodcast.com. Tune us in again next time for more discussion.